Okay, Rabosai, welcome, welcome to our first opportunity to learn together at Tufshin Pei Gimel. Wow, unbelievable. That's a pretty advanced year. Whew. Anyway, and we're holding right now at the beginning of the ninth perek, HaKotev LeIshto, on the Daf Pei Gimel, and we're still trying to make a clear-cut delineation what precisely the rights are on the financial level, which we found to be the infrastructure of the relationship per se. A lot of the things we've already worked through, but there's one open issue, and that is we have the complex interrelationship, remember, between the ownership of property. We've been discussing Nichsei Malug at great length, and we've got two completely different issues here with the Nichsei Malug, which we already started discussing in the previous parak. One is, of course, that the Nichsei Malug gives the Baal HaZkus to Peres, and we had to define whether that was something he was able to sell and what type of responsibilities go hand in hand with his rights to the Perot and the way in which he could translate the right to the Perot perhaps into cash if it was adding to the value of standard of living. And things like that. But what we didn't get into, other than in just the general discussion previously about what happens upon the death of the Shomeret Yavam and cases like that. So we were talking about the problem of who gets the Arusha, whether is it clear in whose Rishus the Nichsei Malug is. And that leads us now to actually examine the interrelationship between the rights to the property in terms of Yerusha and the rights to the property in terms of the Perot. And actually, it isn't clear exactly what would be the thing that would be considered to be the more immediate schus to the husband. So that, there's one way to check, and that is if he opts out. And this has to do with the opting out issues that we were talking about. We mentioned that there was a question of whether there is a possibility for the woman to opt out of the Malug relationship of Peres because of the fact that that's an insurance policy, and you can't opt out of an insurance policy that at the end you're going to insist or believe that you're entitled to the insurance payment anyway, you know, and you opt out until you can save half of the time of payment. So that was one approach, or the Bittel of the entire Takana was another approach, and there's other approaches as well. So here, what we want to know is, how about if somebody writes to his wife, Dinu Dvarim Ein Li Benechaseich, that I am actually withdrawing any claims to your property. That's interesting, because there's two very different issues that it would be discussing. One would be the Peros, and the other would be, in the event of his wife's death, whether he's going to inherit her. So what would that mean exactly, that shtar, apparently, because it says HaKotev LeIshto, note, it doesn't provide an opt-out just verbally, but it seems to say that you could write something or another to the effect that you're actually relinquishing your rights. And the din is, says the Tanakhama, HaRezel Chel Perot B'chaya, he continues to eat the perot, and what's more, he even will inherit her if she dies. Well, so then what the heck did he write that for? It's got to mean something, doesn't it? Why did he withdraw his claims against her property? Only to the extent she imachra v'natina kayam. So he must mean that even though normally I could prevent her, remember, as we saw previously, I could prevent her from selling or giving away her Nichsei Malug, that's the only thing that I don't have any claims. We say I don't have claims to the property. Doesn't mean I'm giving up the rights as long as you maintain the property. However, I will not fight a sale of your property. Now, suppose he specifically adds, Din udvarim ein li b'nechasayach u'b'peirotehem. Aha. So now here he has withdrawn from two things. He says, I'm withdrawing claims against your property and claims to the peirot of your property. Now what? Well, that is actually an opt-out. And it's not clear how you can do this exactly. I mean, how do you just announce that you're not going to exercise rights that you have? Is an announcement like that something? Is it the fact that it was written that makes it valid? Was there a Kenyan of some kind? Doesn't this have something to do with the issue of Davar Shelo Balei Olam? And sometimes it raises all kinds of question marks, which of course the Gemara will go into. But since he mentioned the Perot, in this case, he in fact has given away his rights to the Perot. And furthermore, of course, she could sell, like we said before. And still, we insist that if she dies, he never meant to give away his rights to Yerusha. So this is consistent with what we said before, and this is all a libe the Tanna Kamma. So that would mean that all you need to say is, I'm no longer going to have any claim against your Perot, and that's the end. Rabbi Yehuda says that's not the end at all. And this guy who supposedly has relinquished his claims, he can continue to eat Perot. So that only stops him from taking the Perot, but not the Perot of the Perot. He would have to spell it out. He would have to say that din udvarim ainli binechasayich ubeperotehem ubeperotehem ad olam. Whoa, okay, we're going to see which part of that language is the part that makes it go forever. I mean, because if it's just ad olam, then what do you have to give the whole deal about perot or perot perot and so on? You'll notice that this would have something to do with how we say our siyum, you know, because tzatzaino, tzatzaian, tzatzaino. I mean, is that like the peret perot kind of thing, or can you just say just tzatzaino in general include this course of the gather brocha that we make on Torah? Okay, all to be discussed. Now, suppose he adds, ooh, so now he is, seems to be opting out of rights that he has of claims against her property in the event of her death, not to mention that he's opting out of rights to her perot. So in that case, first of all, yes, that works. He does not eat perot. And in that case, if she dies, since he said specifically that it, even in the event of your death, so then apparently this is going according to Rabbi Yehuda, because it also mentions Perei Perot, and that's necessary. And Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says, even so, believe it or not, despite the fact that he spelled out Ubemotayich, it does not affect his rights to inherit her. And Imeta, she is still going to be inherited by him. An amazing explanation by Reb Shimon ben Gamliel for this is the fact that he was Matna Mashikatuv Batorah. So obviously, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel holds that the Yerusha of the Baal is not a Derabbana. It's an actual Dioraita, and that's why he says, you cannot make any types of conditions on what the Torah says. So you can't say, I'm going to take your property, but I'm telling you, I'm making a condition. It's not, that doesn't mean literally condition in the sense of tonight, but I'm stipulating that I don't want to take the rights to the inheritance. You cannot do that because the Torah gave you that inheritance, and therefore trying to make any type of t'nai on what is a beferish right to an obotel. But now, where in the world does it say in the Torah that a husband inherits a wife? I mean, it very clearly does not. It keeps talking about the family, the mishpachto, which we darsha means dafka mishpachat aviv. And remember, we've had that whole the whole discussion, like Abba Yibum, it has to be those that are shaykh to the Yerusha, and that's how we learn that it's Dafka, a brother from a father, and so on and so forth. Where in the world does the Torah talk about inheriting a wife? So this is based on the sheet of the Mandi Omar, who learns Baba Basra from the Pasuk, Untatemet nachalato l'she'ero hakarove lav mi mishpachto. Now listen to that. That's very clear. The last step is, okay, if you've run out of the brothers and the father's brothers and so on, then it goes to the next one in line, the closest relative from your family. Yeah, okay, that's great. The family we know is the family from the tzad of the father that we learn out from the pasuk as well, through the census that were done, all mishpacha beta'av. But Surprisingly, after making that very clear in the Tatemet Nachlatola Sheiroa Karovela Vemishpachto, the Torah adds two words that are completely and totally meaningless, absolutely redundant. Doesn't the word unetatemet nachlato mean that he's going to get the nachala? Absolutely. So do you need to throw in the arashota? And he will inherit that nachala? Obviously inherit that nachala. If you're giving him the nachala, then that is the same thing as saying he will inherit the nachala. But the point is that the arashota is a reference to the other meaning of she'ero, which we know we always use she'ero in terms of the concept of shared flesh, in terms of arayas, or in terms of a relationship to his wife. And therefore, it says v'yarash otah has a completely different meaning of she'ero. The she'ero v'yarash otah. So it's a new pasuk telling me that a man inherits his wife. But this is Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. Says the Gemara, Toni Reb Chiya, you should know that the entire discussion in the Mishnah in Rabbi Chiya's Girsa, which he wrote into a Braita, it says, Ha'omer le'ishto. He could just say this. Doesn't say anything about writing it. Then it just goes on with the same words in the Mishnah, except that the word that is the name of the chapter, which is Hakotev, is replaced by Ha'omer. So how significant is that? I mean, is it indeed necessary to be kotev? Apparently not. In other words, Rabbi Chiya seems to be saying that the mention of this word hakotev was not meant lahalacha, that that's the only way. Because if you actually write it down in a shtar, so then that itself involves a kinyan. He doesn't have to. He could just say it. What do you mean he could just say it? I don't even understand what good it is to write it. You don't achieve anything in writing something like this. It's a totally meaningless statement. But Tanya, if you have over here, let's say you have a business partner, and you say to your business partner, listen, dinner dvarim ainli al sadasu, I don't have any claims against this particular holding that we own together, you know? Or ainli esikba, I don't have any business at all with this particular thing. Or you say, my hands are out of this. Yaday misuleket hemena. Those statements are totally meaningless statements. If you want to give it away, then you have to give it as a gift. You have to say, Chalki b'sada zo k'nu yalacha, and you write a shtar for the gift. Well, you can give him the gift, you can make a kinyan. But what is the point of simply saying that you don't intend to what? You don't intend, thank you. Well, I changed my mind. It's like, there's nothing real that I've transferred to you in making any of those statements. So what good is telling your wife, I have no claims against your property, if you already have those rights? Amrei Devei Rabbi Yonai, who said you already have those rights, my dear friend? The Mishnah did not specify at what point in the relationship the husband is writing this. Now, you're absolutely correct in saying that even writing wouldn't do any good once he already owned these rights. He would have to actually give them away with a proper gift. But we're talking about Bikotev Lava Oda Arusa. This was written before they ever had Nisuin. And so, okay, I can say, look, I know that I am due to get these rights when we conclude this marriage with Nisuin. And the reason that it's possible to opt out is like Rav Kahana. The Omer of Kahana, Nachala Haba'a La'adam Mimakom Acher. When a person gets an inheritance, not through the standard inheritance in the Parsha of the Nachalos of the Torah. So in other words, he would be getting this through a wife, and it's coming to him through her. Then you can say that you don't want it in advance. So Adam Matne'alea, Shalo Yirashena. Since he doesn't have this right now, it's going to be falling to him, as opposed to normal Yerusha, where the Torah defines this as yours, requiring no additional kinin and so on and so forth. So then he can say that I'm not interested in this. And that basically is part of the idea that you can always opt out of a takana that was made for your teva, and he's opting out. Fine. So that is, as we know, Kitarova, Diomarova, as we've spoken about all along, about the woman's ability to opt out of any of these takonas that she feels she doesn't want, such as her getting support from her husband in exchange for his stealing her salary, which is 10 times his. So obviously she can opt out, and that's exactly what we're doing over here. He's opting out. And that's Kiri Omar Rava. The Omar Rava, Omer Yev Shibe Takanat Chachamim. In any event where someone opts out of a takana that was only for him, and therefore he says, well, I appreciate your consideration, but I'm not interested, then we don't force him to take something that was there for him. Kagon Zo, now it doesn't explain here what the Kagon Zo is, but Rava was referring to Kagon Zo. I was going to ask what he was referring to. Shom Imlo, what was he talking about when he said Kagon Zo? He was talking about that case we had before. Kirivun Amarav, the Amarivun Amarav, a woman can always opt out of support by her husband. Yukola Isha Shetomar Labala. I want to keep my own finances. I want to keep my own bank accounts. And I'm not interested in your supporting me. And therefore, I'm not interested in sharing my money with you. And therefore, since the whole takana was made in her benefit, as we saw from the beginning, then the same thing would be true of a husband. If he wants to opt out of his rights to the Nechzei Maluk, he can do that. Wait, so then if that's true, why did we say that it's only when she was in Arusa? See, before it made sense when you were telling me, I thought that that meant because since he didn't get it yet, so because of that, you don't need a Kenyan to transfer something that you haven't yet received. But now you're telling me that it's basically a general din of opting out of rights that are yours through a takana made for your benefit, right? So what's the difference? If you're already after Nisuin, it's still a takana that was made to your benefits. Omer Abaye, because the fact is that once she's already a Nisua, then Yado Ki Yada. There is no way to opt out of something that you already own. And since in order to do that, you're going to have to actually write a shtar with a kinyan and so on. You can't just talk about it or write it up as an intent. It has to be an actual kinyan. So over here, he is given a kinyan in that karka. And to get rid of it, once he's already Nisuin, after Nisuin, then his ownership is similar to hers. She over there is opting out of something that's coming into her anew every day. He's coming to support her every day, and he's coming to take her salary every day. That you can opt out on. However, once she already has brought in this property, so then there's got to be a real transfer of ownership. Rava says, I don't like the way you said that. I mean, what you said is true, but you didn't say it properly. You said, Yado ki yada, that he has just as much rights and ownership of that property as she does. I say, Yado adifa miyada. I say that, no, it's the wrong way to put it, even though you're right insofar as what you said. But the bottom line is that his rights are actually stronger than her rights. I mean, like, what does that mean? You're right. It doesn't mean anything in this particular context of a marriage, but it does mean something in the whole issue that we just had in the previous parak, which is the question of what is the din with the Nechzei Melug of a Shomeres Yavam, where the Shomeres Yavam died, and over there we had that, well, we don't know who's supposed to get it. According to Beit Shammai, there's actually two Yorshim. And according to Beis Hillel, he says that her family, Beis Avia, they get to take the entire Muluk. So that Machlokas really revolves around the question on who actually was the main owner of that Nechzei Muluk. So what Rava is saying is that this is going to make a tremendous nafkamina in terms of that machlokas, because according to what Abaya is saying, so then if the husband's rights were the only the same as her rights, so then the question would be that we should split it equally. Masha'in Kane, if we're talking about Rava, who says that no, the husband has stronger rights than her, so then that should mean that the Yavam has those rights when the original husband died. In which case, if the Yavama dies, that means that her father's family wouldn't get the Yerusha, according to Beit Hillel. And therefore, according to Rava, the whole machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel was not about the property that she had before. It's only about a new Yerusha that takes place while she's the Shomeres Yavam, and that property the husband had never had because he or she inherited that property after his death. There comes out to be a major machlokas between Abaye and Rava about where the machlokas of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel is in the previous parak, Legabe, the property of a Shomeres Yavam who dies. Iboilu. Okay. You said, we were talking over there about business partners. I mean, forget about the specific issue of the marriage and so on. I'm just interested to know what would be the case if he actually did a kinyan. So he does a kinyan sutter. So if you do a kinyan sutter about something that is completely useless, and that in that case you're simply confirming your intent. I told you that I am going to opt out of this particular field or these particular sales or whatever. So I'm just curious about what the din would be in such a case where the guy actually goes ahead and he makes a kinyan. So does that simply restate with greater commitment what he said before and therefore it's meaningless? Or if he makes the kinyan sutter, is he making it on the actual thing, like the soda that he wanted to opt out, in which case it would be a valid transfer? So Rabbi Yosef says it doesn't mean anything because all that he did is he made a stronger commitment with an act of kinyan to something which is meaningless, because the very statement that he made that he's now confirming with a kinyan didn't do anything because it wasn't an act of transferring ownership. It was some weird statement of intent on something that's his. You can't get rid of something that's yours by saying, my intent is not to fight for this. What is that supposed to mean? Rav Nachman says, no, if you did a kinyan, why do you think he did the kinyan? He must have done the kinyan in order to actually create a real kinyan on the thing itself. Omar Abaye, so Abaye says, well, I mean, Rav Yosef makes sense in the event that the guy, what happened is, let's imagine a situation where he says this to his business partner, the business partner goes the next day and starts putting a fence around the soda to make sure that this guy doesn't change his mind. Right? Okay, so now this is going to be my soda. And then what happens is that the one who made the dinudvorim, the commitment, he is orer. He immediately says, no, I didn't mean to give him. I was just saying I'm not going to be arguing with him. I never meant that he should actually take the soda. So there it makes sense that, look, the guy went directly after the person told him, and he went and did something, and the person is making it very clear. What are you, crazy? What do you think? I was giving you the field? I was never giving you. And this is when he made the kinyan. So it's clear that the kinyan wasn't meant to be a kinyan on that field. It was meant to be a kinyan on the statement. And that's what Rabbi Yosef says. That's exactly all that it is. Aval, the Omeid, if he sits around and he watches this guy try to actualize a kinyan on the karka itself, and then all of a sudden he starts complaining, no, I didn't mean to give anybody, you know, for the past week he hasn't said a word. So then we have to assume that, no, the kinyan that he made was a real kinyan. And then some friends of his told him, you know, you don't have to actually stick with this if you don't want to, because you could always claim that the kinyan was only a commitment to the dinudvorim mainly, but you didn't want to transfer it to him. Well, then it's too late. If his intent was at the time of the kinyan to be makna to him, he gave it to him with chalipa, which is a kinyan sutter, of course he would be kaina. Says Amemar, I'll tell you what the halacha is. The halacha is if he said those words and he made a kinyan, he was transferring the actual field to him. So Rav Ashi asked Amemar, yeah, but you haven't explained yourself. Do you mean The halacha is that it's his, if only in the case where he shut up and he was omed, or even in the event that the guy is me'orer, that you can still claim that you were kind of the karka from him. Says Amemar, well, who cares? Who cares if he was screaming or if he was quiet? Oh, what do you mean, says Rav Ashi? Makes a big difference, because we had explained before that Rav Yosef says that if the guy was Ma'orer immediately when this person tried to take over the field, so then we have a strong reason to assume that the Konumiyado was not meant as a Kenyan of the actual field. Like, why all of a sudden, right after he does the Kenyan, why all of a sudden is he coming along to complain about the person taking what we was just given? That would be a big difference. How come you don't explain it? Omar Lay said, Amema, because I never heard of it, meaning makes no sense to me. I don't believe that it makes the slightest bit of difference between immediate Irur or an Amida. I'm telling you an absolute that this is what it means when you make that Kenyan. It's not only a response to the guys being quiet or making any of that. Forget about that. I never said that I believe that there's a difference in those two cases. Okay, so then getting back to the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says, all right, so then what did the guy mean? Why did he opt out? And in the end, you're saying that it made no difference. And you explained, well, he only meant to opt out of the rights to prevent her from transferring the property through a gift or through a sale, right? That's what you said. I mean, how do you manage that? She's got a contract. You wrote her, Dinu Dvarim, right? So now, if she actually doesn't want to give him the peros, or she doesn't want to give him the rights to Yerusha, so why can't she go to court, show this paper that he wrote, and say, look, this is a blanket statement. Now my husband is trying to claim that he only meant that I shouldn't, he shouldn't prevent me from selling the property. I say that he meant everything. So, I mean, wouldn't he have to prove that he actually meant only that she shouldn't be prevented from selling? I mean, you're telling me it doesn't make any difference about his rights to the same look now. Omar Abaye, because this is a general clause. Yad ba'al hashtar al hatachtona. In the event, if you are trying to be motzi from another person a right that he has or a chazakah that he has of something, then you have got to be able to prove that that is what your shtar was addressing. And it's not the person who is currently muksak who has to prove that it's not what the shtar is addressing. So in other words, anything unclear is up to the bala shtar to prove. And since there are three different things that the Baal owns over here, he owns the Peiros, he owns the Yerusha in the event of her death, and he owns a Sheba that prevents her from selling. Now, we want to give him the least loss. And the least loss, which we'll talk about in a moment why that's the least, but the least loss is his inability from this moment on to prevent her from selling. Well, I understand. Why is that the least important right? I would have thought, I mean, the least important right maybe would be just the Peiros, because, I mean, the other things are the goof of the karka. So doesn't it make sense to say, look, you know, let's give it the interpretation in which he gave away the least valuable part of the three things he owns? Meaning he wants the property. So if she wants to transfer the property, no, you can't do it. If she's going to die, yes, I want the Yerusha. So that means the only thing he was giving away was just the temporary payout. Isn't that like, I don't know, I would think that that's certainly much less valuable than the possible loss of the entire property if she dies. Yes, but you know what people say. A gourd in the hand is better than a pumpkin in the bush. And that's the whole point. I mean, over here, you know, the possibility of her dying or selling or whatever, that's a pumpkin. Right now, I've got myself a Peiros, you know, I don't know what's going to be. I don't know if she's going to predecease me, that I should sit worrying about that right now. I want my parents. So maybe that's the point. And I don't want her to sell it out, because if she sells it out, I'm a big trooper. Well, I mean, what about the fact we're saying over here that what, the Arusha? Maybe the only thing that he wanted to do is he would say, I don't want the Arusha. But he could still stop her from selling now, because, I mean, the Arusha, listen, if she sells out tomorrow, he's not going to get his payros. Masha Enkein, the Arusha, I don't know. Maybe she won't even die before him. I mean, maybe that's the thing that least concerns him. Why are you so clear to you that the thing that least concerns him is the fact that she might go and sell the property? Omer Abaye, well, I'll tell you, it's more common for a woman to die than to sell her Nechsei Maluk. Selling the Nechsei Maluk, I mean, that's like selling everything that she got from her home, you know? And we, as we said, the idea of the Shevach Beit Aviyah, that's a very profound psychological connection that she has. And because of that, it's much more common that she should die than that she should actually sell this out. And therefore, since this husband is now Misalakin Ishnafshe, he is taking away, in other words, he's waiving a right that he has, right? So when he waives his rights, we can assume as an umdana that he means to waive the least likely right that he's going to be able to require. And that's the milsa de lo shchicha. He's not going to waive the rights of the thing that is more common. So that's why we say all he meant was to prevent her. He's giving away the right to prevent her from selling. Ravashi says, you don't need to say this. It simply is the meaning of the words that he used. What words did he use when he withdrew? He wrote, b'nechasayich. Somebody wrote, in your property. He didn't write a word about peirot, and he didn't write a word about lachar misa. He said, b'nechasayich, while this property is yours. So what could that mean? It doesn't mean peirot, and it doesn't mean Yerusha, and there's only one thing left that it could mean, which is her ability to sell. That's the whole point. It's not a question of analyzing what is more valuable to him. Then comes along Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda says, you can always eat peirot, peire peirot, unless you spell out that I don't have any dinu dvarim to your peirot, to peirot, peirot tayem, at sof olam. Tana rabbanu. Well, let me just explain to you, what do we mean exactly by peirot, and what do we mean by peirot, peirot? So let's talk about a case where she brings in a field. So ichnisa lo karka, and now this karka grows some peirot on it. So those, obviously, those are peirot. That's the definition. Now, suppose those peirot are sold, and then land was purchased. Mochar peirot v'lakach miham karka. And now the karka that was purchased with the peirot itself has new peirot. Those are what we're referring to as peirot, peirot. So now you say, I need to say two separate things, which is a little weird. I need to say both dinu dvarim einli l'peirot, peirotayem, and I have to throw in ad sof ha'olam. I mean, what was the main point over here? Niboiluhu. According to the way Rabbi Yehuda is phrasing this, is the critical word peire peirot, or is the critical word ad olam? So, in other words, the idea of peirot, peirot, that is the only thing that expresses not only the current peirot, or is the most important thing, the fact that you, because we'll see, according to the first approach, if the peirot, peirot is dafka, that would mean that if you just said ad olam, it wouldn't work. Why wouldn't it work? Because all you were saying is, I won't eat your peirot, meaning first generation peirot, ad olam. That's all it means. So whatever dates you produce now, you know, and you want to package them, and we'll open them up in 20 years, I won't eat them in 20 years either. That's all he's saying. But if you don't say peire peirot, but then, I mean, why do you need to say the ad olam? So I think Gemara is going to go through what each one adds. So is one of them the critical expression and the other one wouldn't be enough? Or it, actually, do we require both of them to make it clear? So that what I'm saying is, peirot and peirot, peirot, and don't think I only mean peirot, peirot, but not peirot, 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 for God's sake, because ad olam, no matter how many peirots you're going to add, I've already thought of that. But so then that would be the way that both of them are functioning together. Says Igmar, well, I mean, look, here's the difference. I mean, if you're going to tell me that the critical words are peirot, peirot, you're going to have to explain to me why in the world Rabbi Yehuda mentioned ad olam. No, because maybe what the Mishnah means by that is saying that the moment that you write peirot, peirot, that means peirot, peirot ad olam. Now, that means however many times you add peirot, in which case the tzetzei tzetzei ehem is forever. Maybe that would be the point. Yeah, and what about if you learn it the other way? What about if the critical word is the ad olam? Why mention peirot, peirot? Well, that's coming to tell me the opposite. It's coming to tell me that even if you would have written peirot, peirot, it's only going to work if you add ad olam. But if you don't add ad olam, so then maybe you mean exactly what you're saying. So that even if you said peirot, peirot, it would only have meant the peirot, peirot, but not to peirot, peirot, peirot. And it's only writing ad olam that works. That's the point. But if you don't write ad olam, it won't help to write peirot, peirot, because you're only opting out of peirot, peirot. And what about if you say that I need both of them? Can you explain to me why I need both? I mean, they seem to be saying the same thing. Of course, because look, let's say that you wrote peirot, peirot, you didn't write ad olam. So I would have thought that that means peirot, peirot, but not peirot, peirot, peirot. And he's allowing himself still the rights to the third. So now we have the tertiary peirot that he can eat. So therefore, I need that ad olam. But if you just write the word ad olam, I don't know that ad olam means no matter how many peirot, 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 peirot you add, I would have thought that the ad olam is a reference to the peirot. And the peirot, I will, no matter how long it is, even if you, I will never eat the direct peirot. Not this year and not in 10 years and not these peirot in 10 years, but peirot, peirot, I never ever opted out of that and was only going on the actual peirot. Therefore, I need to say both of them. So, basically, I'm not really sure how to interpret Rabbi Yehuda, because the Gemara never says, I'll bring you a proof. Iboilu. Kosav v'adinu dvarim enli b'nechaseich u'bepeirei peirot. But he didn't say peirot. That's interesting. He leaves out the word peirot, and he only says, I'm opting out of peirei peirot. Can he eat the peirot? And do we say, well, if you say tzatzai, tzatzai am, then you certainly mean tzatzai am, don't you? You're even including the tzatzai, tzatzai am, or maybe not. Can he eat the peirot? Do we say mi peirot, peirot, which is what he said? That's all he is actually waving. So solik nafsha. But the peirot themselves, he was never misalik nafsha. Or perhaps it's just an easier way of saying, even peirot, peirot, and I'm not going to eat anything, certainly not the peirot either. I don't understand. That's a crazy question. It must mean that he cannot eat the peirot, because if he can eat the peirot and he's only waiving his rights to the peirot, peirot, there won't be any peirot, peirot if he eats up the peirot, darn it. And so what's the question? So if mi peri lo solik nafshe, once he eats up those peirot, where the heck are these peirot, peirot going to come from? Oh, come on. I mean, that's silly. Take a look at the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda says that he's able to eat peirot, peirot unless he withdraws peferish from peirot, 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 so on and so forth. I mean, that's the same question. If Lamaisa, the guy was eating the peirot, right? So how in the world are, or she takes the peirot, if he's withdrawn from that, where are these peirot, peirot going to come from? You can ask the same question. So obviously, Rabbi Yehuda was talking about a case where some of it was sold to buy land. I'm understanding what a weird question that is. It's the same thing is true over here. We're talking about the husband had a right to eat the peyrot. He didn't eat all the peyrot. He sold some of them and bought some land. And the question is, if that land has peyrot, he's saying, that I'm not going to take that. I'm buying this land for you, and you'll be able to collect your ksuba from it, but I'm never going to be able to have anything from it. So that's the question. Did he mean to withdraw from the peyrot as well? I think it's a perfectly reasonable question, which the Gemara basically doesn't answer. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel omer, if she, even the case where he says, in your lifetime, and after your death, that nonetheless, it's considered to be matna o mashe katub Torah, he cannot withdraw from her Yerusha. Because the Torah gave the Yerusha, as we saw in the pasuk of the Arash Ota. Omar Rav, well, that's the halacha, but not because of his reason. His reason is wrong. It's not because it's matna o mashe katub Torah, but he's right in his psak, because of something else. Okay, can you explain yourself over here? Lo mita amei. So what do you mean? My halacha, Reb Shimon Gamliel, lo mita amei. I mean, are you trying to say that the halacha is like Reb Shimon Gamliel, that even if he beferish withdraws la'achar mota, that the halacha is he's still going to inherit her, but that Reb Shimon Gamliel is wrong in his logic, because Reb Shimon Gamliel was basing that psak, as it says in the Mishnah, because it's matnea mashikatuba Torah, and therefore the Tanai is batal. So maybe the reason that Rav says that it's not mitame is because actually Rav would hold that when it comes to the dinim of mamon, the Tanao is kayam, because it's like any other Tanai b'mamon, and you can make a Tanai b'mamon. Remember, Reb Yehuda was the one who said before that even though the Torah said that you have to provide clothing and food for a woman, if you make a tanai with a woman that I'm marrying you on condition that I don't have to supply you with those things, since it's only a monetary issue, you call tanai shiba moment, is kayam. So he made a tanai shiba moment, I'll leave it to Reb Yehuda. And therefore, the same thing would be true over here. He's making a tanai shiba moment. The thing is that nonetheless, Reb Shimon Gamliel is right, but for a totally different reason. The reason that he's right is because he's wrong. It's because the Yerusha of the Baal is actually not a Diraisa. The Yerusha of the Baal is Dirabbanan. And sometimes, as we've seen, Chachamim asu chizuk l'divrayem yoter mishel Torah. There are times when the Chachamim, because of the Takaros Chachamim that people tend sometimes to regard lightly, that they were more machmir. So therefore, even though matna mashikatuba Torah would be doable in a monetary issue, but when it comes to the Rabbanan's concern for the interrelationship here, they made it even stronger than if it would have been a deraisa. So maybe that's what Rav is saying, velomitaime? He's only right because he's wrong? No. I know that that's not what it is. Because are you trying to tell me that Rav actually holds that if it's only a dine momenis, so then you can make a tonight even under Diraisa? So here somebody is trying, he makes a sale, he wants to sell it at a higher price. He makes a deal with the guy. Look, this sale, you can get this somewhere else for cheaper. You want it, I'm selling it, but only on condition that you understand that I'm overcharging you, all right? And if it turns out that you're upset about how much I overcharge you, tough, because you agreed that there's no dinam of onah in this sale, right? And we cannot be mavatal the sale. Rav says it doesn't matter. He could still be mavatal the sale because he's being matza mashkaz of b'tera. The Torah says there's a din of ona'a. You can't cancel a din of ona'a. B'shmuel omer ein lo alav ona'a. So Dafka, it's Rav who holds that apparently that even in a case of a t'nai sheba moman, Rav does not agree that you can make a t'nai sheba moman. So don't try to tell me that that's why Rav holds that in this case, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel is wrong, because you really could be matna mashikas, because it's only a moment issue. Not so. Here Rav says, even a mammon you can't. Okay, so what does he mean? Now, Loch is like Rabbi Gamliel, but not because of Rabbi Gamliel's own logic. Why? Ella, have a chakrab shememi Gamliel, in terms of hamatna, mashakatu, bat Torah, tina, o batel, that is correct. However, it's not because of what he's saying, because Rabbi Shimon Gamliel holds that in the case where she dies, that meta yirashena, but Rav holds that in reality, meta lo yirashena, he will not inherit her because it's not a d'oraisa. No, come on. Of course, that's not what Rav is saying. Then he should have said that the ta'amim of Rav Shimon Gamliel are right, but not the halakha, because he's applying it to a drabanan instead of a d'oraisa. So that's not what Rav is saying either. So what the heck is he saying? Well, maybe he's saying halakha Rav Shimon Gamliel, in terms of the halakha, yes, if the wife dies, then this husband is going to inherit her, even though he said he won't. But not because of the svar of Rav Shimon Gamliel, that in a d'oraisa, a masa mashikatuba toratuna obatel, which implies that if it were a drabanan, tuna'o kayam, that's wrong. Even if it's a drabanan, the tanai is batel. And therefore, in this case, it has the same din. I agree with you that if it were a d'oraisa, it certainly would be batel. But I hold that the Rabbanan were machmer over here to make it as strong as a d'oraisa. And it has nothing to do with the idea of matzah mashikatu batorah here, because this is a d'rabbanan. Oh, sorry, that can't be. That's not true, because then you agree with both his tam and with his halakha, and all you're doing is adding. You're saying it would be true even in a d'rabbanan, but it's true in this case anyway, because they gave it the same chizuk as the d'oraisa. So since the d'oraisa he's right about, so he's also right about this. So he's adding. He's not saying he's wrong. He's saying he's more right than he knows. So why are you telling me the lav mitame? Okay. Can you please give me a reasonable explanation of what that meant? It meant like this. Ela. Halacha k'rav Shimon Gamliel, in terms of the fact that if she dies, he will inherit, but not because of the svara of Rav Shimon Gamliel. The Rav Shimon Gamliel holds Yerushas HaBaal is a d'oraisa. V'chol ha-matneh ma-shekatuv b'Torah t'na'o botel. And Rav holds, you see, that Yerushas HaBaal is d'rabbanan, but Rav holds that anyway. Osu chizuk l'divrayim k'shel Torah. So don't tell me that the reason is that he was Masa Mashikasa Batera. It's not. It's actually because it's Masna Al Mashatiknu Rabbanan. Except that Rav holds, even Masa Mashatiknu Rabbanan is also Tna'o Batel. Now that means that according to Rav, the Yerusha of a Baal is not a D'oraisa. That's Gufa what he's arguing on with. And tomorrow, we're going to look into that inference of Rav and see if it's really true, because we have indications that actually, according to Rav, it is more than a drabanan, as we shall see, Bezrat Hashem, on our first morning daf yomi of the year Tavshin Pei Gimel, Bezrat Hashem.